Hey there, and welcome to the latest episode of Mobile Wallet Marketing Made Easy, the podcast that helps you navigate the ever-changing landscape of mobile marketing. Legal cannabis is a hot topic right now, and with more states legalizing more methods and more means for people to obtain cannabis and cannabis-based products, today on the podcast, we're going to talk about how you can determine whether or not it's the right business for you. I'm Kim Stewart.
And I'm Hazel Fruitman.
And we are back to talk about state legal cannabis and whether or not it's the industry for you.
That's right. If you are thinking about the cannabis industry, which is definitely a hot topic everywhere at the moment, we've got a podcast episode that is tailor-made for you.
So let's get started. First, we want to talk about the various types of state legal cannabis businesses, and then we can move on to assessing the risk-reward ratios of different facets in the industry.
Hopefully, we'll give you a comprehensive overview of what's out there and where you might fit into the industry.
So we're also going to discuss, Hayes, in some depth, the potential downsides as well to joining the ranks of the fastest growing industry in America and Canada today.
Yes. Always the pitfalls when you're looking at something with such a tremendous upside right now. And if you're seriously thinking about getting into the business, you're going to need a plan, since many of the companies and people who are now deciding to take the plunge are coming in with massive funding and years of traditional business experience. You probably want to listen to one of our earlier episodes, podcast 11.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, cannabis dispensary and delivery marketing. We spent a good part of the time laying out a strategy for marketing your legal cannabis business.
Right, so first, let's talk about your relationship with cannabis, if you currently have one. Do you think that it's more of a business or a hobby? I guess what I mean by this is if you just happen to like to smoke weed as a pastime, this might not be the business for you, since the rules and the regulations for successfully running a cannabis-based business in any of the states that currently permit it, well, you know, they're numerous, and we cannot stress enough that it is very important that you stay on the right side of state and local laws.
That's right. And do you have experience running a business in the past? There are lots of compliance and legal issues for a first-time business owner to navigate. If you're just starting out, you haven't had to deal with the things like incorporating, getting your taxes sorted out, and figuring out how to manage supply chain and inventory while under scrutiny. You're going to want to speak to someone about the basics of running a business well before you decide to spend the money to apply for a license.
Yeah, well, I mean, and you know, applying for a license is in most states a fairly expensive and time-consuming process. We should probably say that we don't really work with that segment of the industry. There are plenty of consulting firms and attorneys who specialize in drafting licenses and making sure that applicants have all of their paperwork in order. But we did want to mention it since it is a crucial element to getting started, and in a lot of states, you don't get your money back if your application is not approved.
Right. It's one of the ways that states can generate revenue from the industry, and to be frank, most states and local governments are looking at this from a standpoint of how much money they can collect in fees and taxes.
Isn't that the truth? You know, not to turn it into a political discussion, but realistically speaking, every time the federal government takes funding away from state or local governments, those folks have to figure out where they can find a replacement for the money since they still have to keep operating.
And another consideration before you decide what type of business you want to be in, if you think the cannabis industry could be right for you, it's detail-oriented or big-picture type of person. If you're a big picture, you might want to consider an ancillary business instead of a dispensary, delivery service, or a manufacturer role.
Right. I mean, it's a meticulous and sometimes thankless process to be a person touching the plant, cultivator, dispensary, manufacturer. For cultivators, for instance, you need land or indoor space that is correctly zoned, and then you have EPA regulations, state and local regulations as well, and you know, it's all about what you can and cannot do with your farm or your facilities. In most of the states, it's very highly regulated, and they have seed-to-sale compliance, that generally involves using a software platform to track every plant you grow, when you harvest, what you do with that harvested product, and how you dispose of your leftovers.
And in some states, making mistakes in the process, not properly disposing of leftover roots and waste material, can cause your license to be suspended, or you may be fined instead.
Right, and then you also have the issue of price when it comes to growing or cultivating. You know, a large number of cultivators, some of them are friends of ours, they have found themselves completely unable to sell product at the price that they anticipated. And, you know, in some of those cases, the drop in wholesale prices has been as much as half.
Yeah, a friend of ours once said that if you couldn't grow product that would stand a $900 per pound price, then you shouldn't be in the business. But that was last year, and I think this year it's fair to say that you should be able to withstand bottom end pricing of $500 per pound at wholesale if you want to be able to remain solvent.
Right, and you know, that is a big deal. It's very similar to the way that any other farm or agriculture venture is going to work. Sometimes there's a glut in the market and the price of the product drops precipitously. Only the problem in the cannabis industry is there is no federal or state government that will step in and help subsidize the farm products.
Right. Not only is there no subsidization, the costs of doing business are significantly higher in the cannabis industry relative to any other type of agriculture. The IRS, for instance, doesn't give cannabis businesses the same type of tax breaks that a regular business would get.
Right. So, you know, that brings us to another really interesting point, which is the overall legality of the whole industry. And before you start a cannabis business, you kind of need to determine, you know, how do you determine what is an acceptable level of risk? You know, the business may be legal, that's my imaginary quotes, at the state level, but it's still not going to be legal at the federal level. And, you know, there's always a possibility that you could end up in jail, or you could end up spending thousands of dollars on legal bills and fines to stay out of jail. You know, I don't think anybody just wakes up one day and says, hey, I think I'd like to go to prison. Or, hey, maybe they'll invoke civil asset forfeiture and they'll take my house and my farm and they'll freeze all my bank accounts. I mean, it just doesn't happen like that.
Right, but yet, there are plenty of people who woke up this morning to the police knocking on the door of their property or their dispensary or their manufacturing facility with that very thing happening to them. It's an unfortunate circumstance, and there are still many black market and gray market enterprises in the business that it's going to keep on happening regardless of the state legal position.
Right. So, I mean, we have the CSA, which is the Controlled Substances Act. And what that says is that on the federal level, marijuana is still a Schedule I controlled substance, you know, just like heroin. So even though we have a massive opioid crisis in the United States and in Canada as well, especially Western Canada, there's all kinds of information being presented that show that some of these pharmaceutical companies deliberately misled people in order to get these prescriptions into the mainstream.
And there are plenty of drug companies that would love to have a part of the cannabis industry, and they'd love to keep the small guys or the non-farmer guys out of the business.
Right. So we have Incis, for instance, which is located in Phoenix, where I live. And not only are those guys on the receiving end of both civil and criminal lawsuits for their illegal kickbacks that they were giving away for doctors who prescribed their opioid products, they also, interestingly enough, have an FDA approval for a synthetic cannabis product. So they always spend a ton of money trying to keep states from voting yes on the initiative ballots to legalize cannabis sales.
Well, let's get back on topic. As usual, we've wandered down the path of side notes.
Okay, so yeah. Adding to the risk level, states are always, and I'll use the Washington SB 5052 rules, for instance, they're always making changes to their laws. You know, sometimes they reduce the number of licenses that are available. They change the requirements for the licenses. I mean, you have to think about what would happen if you lost the right to do business. California changed their entire medical law structure and merged it with the new adult use laws into a single set of regulations. You know, even though there are differences in the quantity and THC level available in the medical versus recreational states.
It's like hitting a moving target sometimes. In Canada, every day lately is some new slant on what the proposed adult use legalization may end up being. And it's very hard for people to form a good business plan without enough knowledge and insight as to what is actually going to pass as law.
Well, you know, it's always tough. We do have two ebooks on the subject, and both of those are available for free on cannabiswallet.net. The first one is an overview of the industry. It's called Grow Your Business, and it details how you can apply regular business practices to the cannabis industry to get and keep your business on track. Now, the second one, which is also on cannabiswallet.net, that was our later edition, and it's called Bank Your Business. It's a primer on what you're going to need to do in order to organize your business in a manner that is likely to end up in you being able to get a bank to work with you for deposit banking and or transaction processing.
And that moves us on to a very important point, Kim. What kind of funding do you have or have access to currently? Do you have plans to increase available funding as needed when more companies with better war chests break into the space?
Well, you know, being able to withstand competition from better organized or better funded companies is a huge factor going forward. The idea that the industry is designed to favor small players is kind of a fantasy that's not really proving to be true. You know, in some states, and you use California, for instance, the ballot initiative was written in a way that restricts growers to 1-acre farms. And this was supposedly to offer small businesses the opportunity to succeed. But when you couple that with unlimited numbers of licenses being available to the same entity, that means that big companies can come in and they can apply for and they can receive multiple licenses that enable them to daisy chain properties with cultivation licenses and create big farms.
So let's talk about another types of businesses in the industry besides cultivators. The ones that are directly involved with handling the plant include processors, distributors, product manufacturers, and waste disposal. Most of these types of companies are going to need a lot more funding to run successfully in the beginning, since the equipment needed to handle large-scale extraction or product creation is very expensive.
I know, right? I mean, when we were in Vegas last year for the MJ BizCon show, I was totally stunned at how many heavy equipment booths were there. Now, everything from tractors and field robots to dehumidifiers, extractors, and, you know, like light setups for the indoor grow guys. I mean, it was like amazing.
Yeah, and it was the kind of moment, for me at least, where all the things we've been saying for the past couple of years really hit home. Big money and big industry is here now. So many of the companies with big booths at what is a very expensive show to attend are either subsidiaries of massive agriculture concerns like Scotts. They make Miracle-Gro and other fertilizers and products for cultivation. Or they are these big companies that are finally exhibiting under their own brand.
Right, like Deutsche Process. They're huge and they are openly at shows now. There's a lot of like food service equipment manufacturers. These people aren't stigmatized by the industry anymore. I mean, there's so much money in it and they want the sales.
Right, and let's talk about the ancillary companies, the ones that aren't touching the plant specifically, but are providing products and services that help business to operate.
Oh, so you mean like our cannabiswallet.net mobile ad platform?
Yeah, that's exactly what I mean. But it's not just our platform. Ancillary businesses is a very good vertical to be in this industry. That way you aren't dependent on wholesale cannabis pricing to survive, although at some level you are affected by whether or not customers can make enough money to survive in the business.
Well, okay. On the ancillary level, there are many types of industry-specific verticals here. Everything from accounting, packaging, advertising, compliance, and marketing companies, all the way to security services, cash transport companies, and human resources-related firms. I mean, right now we see what I would call a proliferation in certain types of businesses in the ancillary market. And we know that not all of these are going to survive in a maturing industry. You know, eventually there's going to be very few new licenses left to issue. So all these companies that make money right now advising new applicants, they're going to have to find something else to do or see dwindling opportunities.
And this industry is all about opportunities. Finding a niche and servicing it either by getting there before your competition or by doing a better job at the same or cheaper pricing than others who are in the space. And that's where regular business practices are going to make the difference between success and failure.
Exactly. I mean, you know, at some point as the industry really begins to mature, and, you know, I think we're probably like a year away from that at least. Yeah?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Okay, you know, especially with the changes in the California laws back in January, we're really going to see, no pun intended, kind of a weeding out of companies that weren't really focused on running a solid business, but just happened to be in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, and last but not least, at the moment, banking is still a big issue. Whether you are an architect designing facilities that meet local zoning laws for indoor grows, or whether you're an attorney who specializes in cannabis law, it's hit or miss as to whether or not you can keep your bank account.
So true. I mean, you know, I met with the local government in one of the Northern California areas a couple months ago, and these guys are getting pushback from their bank about depositing money that's being collected in local taxes from state licensed operators. The federal position, it really creates a lot of headaches. And while we continue to operate with the Cole memo and the FinCEN guidance, that dates back to 2014. And it's still tough to convince financial institutions that they should take the risk and bank the industry.
And that's another reason to download the ebook you mentioned earlier, Bank Your Business, from cannabiswallet.net. There's a lot of misinformation out there about how to set up your business correctly in order to qualify for banking services. There are people who claim that you should call your business Joe's Weed Shop, for instance, and if that's a good idea. And the federal guidance in the U.S. is also a bit murky when you look at some of the anti-money laundering provisions.
Right. I mean, I find it incredibly ironic that the banks themselves, they all have holding companies with fairly generic names, but this federal guidance indicates that someone using a holding company with a generic name could possibly be laundering money. Then again, I look at it and, you know, it's nearly every day that we read a report of yet another big bank actually laundering money knowingly and they just get slapped with a big fine for it.
Yeah, so let's recap what we've covered in this episode.
Okay, so first, is this going to be a business or an extension of a hobby for you? Second, do you have or have access to enough funding to realistically start a business and run it until it becomes profitable?
And third, when you choose the segment of the industry that you think is right for you, do you have any background or specific knowledge that will help you to either do the same job faster, better, cheaper, or do you have no idea of what you're actually doing?
Okay, fourth is the risk level. Are you comfortable with the idea that you might lose your investment, lose your capital? I mean, heck, you might lose your personal assets if there's an action against you, and, you know, you could potentially even wind up in jail.
Yeah, and number five, are you able to work under heavy regulation and heavy scrutiny?
Okay, number six, are you able to organize your business in a way that's going to be bankable and will you be able to do the dollar volume transactions needed for a bank to even be interested in taking the risk of working with you?
And while we know there are plenty of additional factors that go into determining whether or not you can get started and manage a business, there are really the most important ones that you need to be able to do, honestly, answer in order to go forward in the business.
So, you know what? I think it's probably best if you're thinking about this industry to get either a sheet of paper or a whiteboard out and actually put your answers in writing. Take like a long look at them and get your head on straight before you just decide, hey, I'm going to go into the weed business and you go for it.
Right. And with that, we are out of time in this episode. I want to reiterate the cannabiswallet.net website has the two ebooks, Grow Your Business and bank your business. And there's a simple contact form on the site if you're looking for more information of you and you want to speak with us about our platform, cannabis banking or consulting services, which is a new product that we've been offering since the first of the year.
Awesome. See you next episode. Have a great week.